Vice President for Academic Affairs and Dean of the College, and this is indeed a special time for us here at Damon. In less than 10 days, we will be celebrating the 70th anniversary of the founding of our great college. We are all very proud of what this small college with a big vision has accomplished over the last seven decades. One of the major contributors to the success of the college is our own president, Dr. Gary Olson, who's been here 5 years, heading into his sixth year, and the great board of trustees that we have and all the trustees who have shared their expertise and time and effort with us over the last seven decades, not you during those 70 years, but we appreciate all the time you put into it. But today we also have a very special guest on campus, the Erie County Executive, Mr. Mark Pollenkars, who will be making his Damon College debut this afternoon. And to introduce our distinguished speaker, it's my pleasure to introduce the president of Damon College, Dr. Gary Olson.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here today, and welcome to Damon College. We're delighted to have Erie County Executive Mark Pollenkars here at Damon to share his views and vision on economic development for Erie County. And I want to recognize and thank the Amherst Chamber of Commerce for its outstanding president, Colleen DePiro, for paving the way for the county executive to be here today. Pleased to have worked with the chamber to host the executive's important presentation this afternoon. And I'd like to take a moment to pay tribute to Colleen DePiro, who after over 30 years of remarkable service to our region is going to be retiring from the Amherst Chamber. She's not only been the face of the Amherst Chamber, she's truly one of the region's great leaders and a role model for women and all of us in business throughout the state. She's going to be sorely missed. So I don't know if she's here in the audience. Are you here? There you are. So let's recognize her for all she's done. I believe it's appropriate that the county executive is here in Amherst to unveil a strategic plan for economic development. I think Amherst is symptomatic of what's occurring in the suburbs of Buffalo and at the same time of what we're seeing, the economic resurgence within the city itself. There's a renewed focus on the economic challenges that face the suburbs like Amherst, including here the ongoing debate surrounding Westwood Project, an emphasis on the development along Main Street, and of course the Sheridan Drive and Niagara Falls Boulevard corridors. And of course we also have political changes in the wind in Amherst that will also pave the way for possible new approaches to economic development in our own backyard. So we look forward to the county executive's remarks, and before I actually introduce him, I'd like to recognize some distinguished guests who are with us today. There are several members of the Damon College Board of Trustees. Caroline Burke is with us, Audrey Bunis, Bob Kaur, and Dennis Elsenbeck. Please help me thank them for being here. We're also pleased to have with us two elected officials with us today, the Mayor of Williamsville, Brian Culpa, and the Deputy Supervisor of the Town of Amherst, Steve Sanders, a good friend of Damon, both of them. Representing the Office of Erie County Legislature, Ed Rath and his legislative aide, Katrina Zeplowitz, is here. And we're pleased to have four representatives from the Office of the Mayor of Buffalo, Byron Brown. So we have Rashana Sanubi, Andy Rabb, Sharon Lindstedt, and Becky Grandor with us. So thank them for being here. Also fortunate to have with us three key economic development leaders from the region, Tom Kucharski, President and CEO of Invest Buffalo Niagara. I apologize for whatever I did to your name. Sam Hoyt, Regional President of Empire State Development, and the Director in Intergovernmental Relations and Empire State Development, and Damon alum, Lynn Marinelli. So let's thank them for being here. And finally, I want to recognize representatives of the Harris Beach Law Firm, our corporate sponsors for the Distinguished Leaders Lecture Series. and truly an outstanding firm. With us is a number of people from the firm: Jim Byer, Jason Britt, Melanie Murato, Robert Murray, Danielle Rizzo, Judy Wagner, Pietra Zaffram, and my good friend Tracy Lopardi. So let's thank them for being here. Now, our speaker, Mark Poloncarz, really needs little introduction to this audience. He's been at the forefront of economic development since he took office as Erie County Executive in January 2012. He's done a lot in that time. Prior to his election as Erie County Executive, he served for 6 years as Erie County's Comptroller. And before running for public office, Mark practiced corporate and finance law in Buffalo at two separate prestigious law firms. And I believe he's especially proud of his deep roots in the region, having grown up in the blue-collar steel town of Lackawanna. In fact, his father is a steel worker at Bethlehem Steel, and his mother worked as a nurse at Mercy Hospital. Mark's a proud graduate of Lackawanna Senior High, the University of Buffalo, and the University of Toledo College of Law. So please help me welcome the county executive and Erie County's today's distinguished leader speaker, Mark C. Poloncarz.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for those kind words. I really do appreciate them. I want to thank you and the entire Damon family for opening up your home to me today and for this tremendous turnout of individuals from across the region to hear what I have to discuss with regards to economic development. And it's apropos that I'm here at a college because, as we know, the educational system, the educational institutions of Erie County form the backbone of what we're doing, especially when it pertains to workforce development. So I want to thank you for the good work that you're doing. The continued growth that we see at Damon is a good example of what this future brings for our entire region. So thank you for being here. I also do want to thank the members of the Amherst Chamber of Commerce for their support, and as well Colleen DePiro for her support over the years. Now, she's not going anywhere. For those of you who don't know, I mean, Colleen sits on the Erie County Industrial Development Agency's Policy Committee and has been a strong advocate for policies that make sense for this greater community, and I know she does want to continue to serve on the Policy Committee and love to have her continue to serve as long as she wants, even if she's not in the role as President and CEO of the Amherst Chamber, because this is exactly what we do in our region, is we work together to create economic development for all. So thank you, Colleen, for all of your service and for continuing to agree to serve in the Policy Committee at the ECIDA. I did note, I know you did some introductions of some of the local officials, and I know we're also joined by Debbie Buckeye, a councilwoman from the town of Amherst, who previously served as the town clerk, and they've had a lot of relationships with Debbie over the years in her various roles in Amherst. So thank you for being here, Debbie, as well as the other elected officials that are here today. Talk a lot about economic development, and then open it up to questions, whether it's on economic development or other issues that's going on right now. Before I wanted to open up, I just wanted to remind everybody, government plays such an instrumental role in people's lives. Sometimes we forget about it. We go about our daily life. But if you ask the people in the Houston area right now, it is government and government only that is providing in a time of need. We've seen that with regards to emergencies in our area, whether it's snowstorms, and we've had our doozies, or floods. And I've had to deal with floods in small scale. I can't imagine what's going on right now. As we're coming here, I see that Governor Abbott from Texas declared a state of emergency in 54 counties. Not 54 towns, 54 counties. They're not expecting the rain to subside for any time in the near future. And this is where government has to step up and show what it's worth. And from what I've been able to tell, they are doing a good job. But this is one of those issues that just reminds everybody. Sometimes they're like, what's government there to do? Well, this is why you train for emergency services, because you never know when the emergency is going to happen. But when it happens, it's got to be trained. It's got to be ready. And that's what we do in Erie County. That's what they do here in the town of Amherst and other areas of Western New York. And I think it just goes to show, again, when people sit there and they look at government and they often say, well, government can be the problem. I don't look at government as being the problem. I look at government as being part of the solutions to problems. And sometimes when you have a natural disaster like the one you're seeing down in Texas, it is the only solution to the problem. And that's why I'm proud to be county executive, because we have an opportunity to make a difference in people's lives and make a difference in our communities, whether we're talking about saving a life in a natural disaster or creating a better environment so that you can grow jobs in your region. And that's what we're going to talk about today is my administration's economic development plan, or the second iteration of it, Initiatives for a Smart Economy 2.0. In June of 2013, my administration released our initial plan, Initiatives for a Smart Economy. When I came into office in 2012, I had described what I wanted to do as county executive, but I didn't sit there and say, okay, on day one, we're immediately going to go in here and change everything. I wanted to go in, even though I was controller for 6 years, and take a look at the system, what we were doing right, what we were doing wrong in Erie County government, sit down with other leaders, whether it was at the ECIDA, the Amherst IDA, of course, New York State, and say, what can we do in a county that we're not doing right now to help strengthen our local economy? And so in June of 2013, my administration released our first economic development strategy, Initiatives for a Smart Economy. And what we did is we identified the key sectors of our local economy as outlined by the Western New York Regional Economic Development Council as sectors for growth in our region. But we also identified those which were key sectors that we knew the county could play a role in that the REDC was not taking a lead role in. And I'll go in a little bit about that, because when you think the REDC, the Regional Economic Development Councils, as well as the New York State Economic Development Office, they're key because they provide a lot of assistance, but there are some things that they don't get into that the county gets into and vice versa. So my goal is, let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's not do the same thing that someone else is doing. Let's work with those that are in place right now and offer the assistance that we can, but also take a lead in other areas where maybe the state's not taking the lead or other communities aren't taking the lead. So we identified 12 sectors in total. You'll recognize a lot of these sectors because they are the key to what is our economy right now in Erie County and Western New York. And if you date back and go back just even to the early 90s, you would not see this list like this. You would see a much shorter list, especially as it pertained to blue-collar heavy industry. That was our backbone. It was our backbone for 100 years. But as we know, if you rely and ride your horse and it's only one horse and the horse breaks down, you got a problem, and that's what happened to our economy because we were limited by relying on just a few key sectors of the economy. But now, if you look at it, these are really 12 of the most important sectors that we have in our economy, and with a couple other things thrown in there. But what we wanted to do was identify these 12 areas that we could play a key role in and make a difference in the local region. So for each economic sector of those 12, we identified a number of initiatives that we could come up with in Erie County to make a difference and to try to grow our local economy. And we identified 64 initiatives in total out of those 12 sectors. Now, here we are in August of 2017, and half of the original 64 initiatives are complete, and of the 32 that are still not complete, 28 are nearing completion. They're going to get done by the end of this year. So did it work? I think the entire economic grouping of everybody doing their work together did work, because all you got to do is look at the numbers. And whether it's my economic plan or what the state is doing or what private sector is doing, from July of 2012 to July of 2013, there's been a net increase of 19,400 jobs. And when I've talked about this before, people are like, oh, you know, it's just government. Government's growing. It's just government's growing in our region. So Buffalo-Niagara region, net increase of 19,400 jobs. There was 19,400 private sector jobs that were created during that period. According to the New York State Department of Labor, there were zero governmental jobs created in the same period. So of the 19,400 jobs that were created from July of 2012 to July of 2017, they were all in the private sector. So the next time someone comes back and say, well, the growth in the Buffalo region is only because government jobs are growing, that's not the case. And when you look at it, and you can look at it month to month and things will change, but when you really look at it long term, and I actually brought with me somewhere here the actual statistics from the New York State Department of Labor, in which it goes month to month, and you see the growth over quarterly periods and then annual periods, you will see it is the private sector that's been pushing the creation of new jobs in our region. It's not government. So while there have been changes, and we see UB's medical school coming downtown and things like that, you're not seeing tens of thousands of new jobs being created by government. It's being created by the private sector. but it's being created by the private sector because of the assistance and work by all involved, whether it's Erie County, New York State, the ECIDA, the Amherst IDA, our friends with Invest Buffalo Niagara. We all play a role, and we need to work together to continue to play that role. So we were nearing the end on the initiatives for a smart economy. Some of my staff was like, this is great. We did a good job. And I said, yeah, that's great. We need to redo it. We need to start again. Now is not the time to rest on our laurels, just because we've had all this nice growth. There are a percentage of our population that is still looking for a job. If you look at the latest unemployment figures, it's roughly 5%. Now, you're always going to have unemployment at some level. Usually you don't drop anywhere below 3.5%. 5%, okay, that means there's still a portion of the population that's looking for jobs. So we need to not rest on our laurels, but to find additional ways in which county government could play a role in job creation in our region. And so that's what the Initiatives for a Smart Economy 2.0 is. It is an update, and it focuses in different areas that we didn't necessarily focus the first time, and that's why we call it Focus on Inclusion. So in addition to the original Initiatives for a Smart Economy, we wanted to try to identify initiatives that would create a shared opportunity for individuals from across the entire spectrum, urban, suburban, rural, race, color. Why is that? Well, it's certainly something that we've been looking at a lot more lately. As you know, we've had the racial equity analysis that was performed and the racial equity a group that was put together to look at inclusion and inclusivity. Because as the old adage goes, all boats rise with a rising tide. Unless a boat has a hole in it. You don't want only certain boats to rise with the rising tide. You do want to see all boats rise with the tide, but as we know, there are always sections where there are haves and have-nots. Well, our goal is to ensure that we create jobs from across the entire region, urban, suburban, and rural. And the issues I hear from people on the east side of Buffalo are really no different than sometimes the issues I hear from people in Collins or issues I hear in Marilla. Well, you know what? It's tough to find jobs here. It's tough to find opportunity for people in our region. And there's various reasons for that, from lack of having the infrastructure in place to even things like high-speed Wi-Fi, high-speed Internet. If you're a business leader and you got a business, you don't want to go to a place where you can't get high-speed Internet. Well, there's a lot of parts of Erie County in the inner city as well as in the rural areas where you can't get high-speed Internet. So our goal was to look at and come up with new initiatives. And we're going to highlight some of the initiatives. I'm not going to go through every initiative, but we're going to look at each area, kind of give a brief overview, but also apply the racial equity impact analysis when we came up with the initiatives and as we move forward. Because what we want to do is we want to ensure that as we're creating economic development for our region and all these areas, we do apply the same type of test that the racial equity group is applying on their own. It's being applied in not-for-profit, it's being applied in the private sector, well, it should be applied at the government sector. So the racial equity impact analysis is basically five questions. Are all racial ethnic groups who are affected by the policy practice decision at the table? If you're making decisions, especially as it impacts a racial group, and they're not at the table, well, then you're not making an actual sound decision that benefits all. How does the proposed policy affect the group? Why does that matter? You may come up with a proposed policy, think it's great, but it actually may create a worse condition. So you have to look and do the analysis on that. How will it be perceived? Just because you come up with the idea and you think it's great, you might go out into the community that you're trying to help, and they come back and they say, no, that's not going to help. That actually makes things worse. Does it worsen or ignore existing disparities? Once again, you got to do this analysis to make that determination. And if you've gone back and you've done that analysis, are there revisions that should be made as a result of what you're trying to do? So that's what we did when we came up with this new group of initiatives, is we just didn't throw things, including the kitchen table on or kitchen sink on the table, and pick out and think, okay, these are perfect, these are going to work, without at least talking with the groups that we think that we have to work with to make them happen. So once again, we go through these 12 key sectors, starting with, as you see, workforce development, smart growth, entrepreneurship. I'll go through these all in a little greater detail. But the goal was work with the partners that we need to work with in each of these initiatives and talk to them before we just announce it. Because if you do it and then they come back and say, that was a dumb idea, and here's why, then you're not going to accomplish much of anything. So initiatives for Smart Economy 2.0, one of the areas is advanced manufacturing, and one of the best highlighted initiatives we have with that is the Bethlehem Steel redevelopment, in which we're acquiring 150 acres to create a new business park. We've actually acquired, well, we closed the additional portion, so now we own about 100 acres out of the 150, and we'll be closing the remainder of that in the next month. Creating a new economic development park in the front section along Route 5. As you drive by it, it's the area that's right along Route 5 on the right as you're heading south to Hamburg. And it's a big parcel of property. Why are we doing that? Well, there's almost no parcel of property that size that could be used for industrial purposes. You don't want heavy industry, or even for that matter, lighter industry, heading out to the green fields. You want to keep them where the infrastructure exists. And as part of this, we're doing a few other things too. We're completing and building a new road to the property to give access to it, and we're also continuing the Shoreline Bike Trail. So if you bike and you end right now at the Union Ship Canal, you're going to be able to continue going right down Route 5. And eventually, it's going to hook into Woodlawn Beach and further south. So that's going to be a nice little amenity of access through the site and safe access for people who want to walk or bike the property. That's just one initiative of a number of them in the advanced manufacturing, because we know advanced manufacturing is a key sector of our local economy. We hear from advanced manufacturing companies. They're looking for sites. We have to have them sites shovel-ready, and that's going to be a big one. That's going to be shovel-ready very soon. And that leads into brownfields and vacant property redevelopment, and one of the initiatives is the focus on shovel-ready programs and fund it. So we're working to ensure not only have we shovel-ready sites, but that we fund it through various means. One way we're able to do that is myself and Senator Schumer, with the help of others, but primarily Senator Schumer, resolved a debate, and the federal EDA, Economic Development Agency, was withholding millions of dollars that were earmarked for Erie County because of a fight for a long, long time. And it took some time, it took a lot of people's efforts, but we were able to free up that money, which now can be used for various things, including a shovel-ready program. And the nice thing is we don't have to go hat in hand and say, we need money for this project. We now have the money released, and we can use it to create shovel-ready sites all across Erie County. And what you hear from developers today and companies is it's not just so much as shovel-ready. They want more than shovel-ready. They want shovel-ready, plus they know that the permits are available, that the town is going to be amenable, the city is going to be amenable, depending where it is. So we have to be well ahead of the curve, and this gives us the opportunity through this initiative to focus on shovel-ready sites, taking maybe an existing site that totally isn't shovel-ready yet, make it shovel-ready so that we can bring the companies to it. Infrastructure and transportation, this is one that my administration supports, which is the light rail expansion to Amherst. I think it's very important as a region for various purposes to ensure that we have light rail expansion between the town of Amherst as well as the city of Buffalo. As we know, the city of Buffalo is the hub of the region. It has to be as strong as possible, because if the city is weak, then the entire area is weaker. We need to be able to bring people downtown, and to do that, we have to have a strong transit system. And the light rail expansion is proposed by the NFTA for now, would actually go through the University of Buffalo up towards an area near the 990. There used to be 22,000 people that worked at Bethlehem Steel. There's basically about 500 people that are doing steel making, but 22,000 people, that's a lot of vehicles, that's a lot of people that you have to get through transportation to the site. Based on the most recent current projections, within two more years, once everything is open, there'll be about 17,000 people working on the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. Now, if everyone decided to drive their car downtown, there's not 17,000 parking spots anywhere near that area. No matter how many more parking garages they build, they're still going to need roughly one-third to half of the people that work there to come through a different transportation source. And so we need to ensure that we have readily available transportation, and that's why light rail expansion, even though it would be some years off, it needs to happen, because as our community grows, we have to ensure that the infrastructure grows with it as it pertains to moving people around our community. And I can't think of a better way than to ensure that we push that light rail expansion through Amherst, and ensure that people who live in Amherst, live in Clarence, live in Tonawanda, have another option to come to work downtown Buffalo or the medical campus rather than just driving downtown. because more buses aren't going to do it, and we can't just create more parking spots. It's as simple as that. And that's just one of the examples of the infrastructure and transportation we're working on. The County Department of Environment and Planning is actually intimately involved with the NFTA and others with regards to light rail expansion, and it needs to because of its role as basically the environmental and planning department for the entire region. So we've been actively involved in that. Another one that is an initiative from my administration is a smart growth fund. We actually put in, through a few different programs, over $1 million annually, but we have one which is $400,000 that funds county municipal comprehensive plan updates for all of our local, not all, some of our local municipalities that are part of the Erie County Community Development Block Grant Consortium. We actually have a healthy competition. We like to see the proposals from the towns, the villages, and a couple of the smaller cities. The City of Buffalo is not included in this because they have their own community development block grant, as well as the town of Amherst. They have their own community development block grant, but everyone else is pretty much under a consortium. And so then we fund their ability to look at their master plans. We're doing that with a couple other areas, too, through community development block grants, because we realize we need to think as a region. We can't just act locally. What happens in Amherst affects the entire region. What happens in Buffalo affects the entire region. And the old view is, well, we just live here. That won't cut it anymore. So we need to ensure that as we move forward with municipal comprehensive plans, that not only are they appropriate for that municipality itself, but it also takes into account what it should as a part of our greater region. When we leave here to go on vacation or wherever we're on business, somebody asks you where you're from, I guarantee almost everyone in this room is going to say, hey, I'm from Buffalo, regardless of whether you live in Amherst, Cheektowaga, Clarence, Hamburg, doesn't matter. I'm from Buffalo. We need to think that way continually when we do our economic plans as well as our municipal plans going forward, that if we think we all are in our own little silo, we were like that for a long time, and that's when we failed. We're not in those silos anymore. We need to think regionally, even on our local level. We have to have a prepared and inclusive workforce, and that's something that I know the Damon College does every day, is to ensure that we are training individuals for the jobs that exist today and tomorrow, not training people for the jobs that existed in the past, which unfortunately was a problem in our workforce for many, many years. Not so much, this isn't a critique of Damon, it's not. It's just in general, we were training individuals for positions that really didn't exist here. Or the individuals would get the training and they just immediately leave. The jobs may have existed here, but it was cheaper to train them here, and then they ended up going down south. So we're focusing on workforce development, and we need to have an inclusive workforce. So very soon, it's complete. I mean, actually, I will be signing an executive order requiring what's called First Source for all projects that are public works projects that are completed by Erie County. And basically what that does is it ensures that there's employment that's applicable from our region and also from areas where we have high poverty rates. Because if we're doing lots of jobs and the tax dollars of Erie County are paying for it, we want to ensure that the citizens of Erie County benefit from it. Now, the IDA has a policy that states you're doing a project, a new build in Erie County, you gotta use basically the 8 Western New York counties as your employees. But we're saying if you're gonna do a project on behalf of the people of Erie County, I think it's almost 90% of those have to be Erie County residents. And they've gotta come from, and not all of them, but a percentage of them have to come from areas which have chronic poverty rates, because you want to be able to help people who are in need. If the same companies are bringing in people from outside the area, which is what was happening for quite some time there, and we were paying for the project, but we weren't getting a benefit from it as a result of other than the project going up, but the construction jobs are going elsewhere, or they were going to the same few companies that didn't hire people of color, didn't hire women, that's not a good thing. So I'll be signing very soon an executive order that requires it for all Erie County Department of Public Works projects. A good example of a project that would have applied if it had been in place at the time that we bid it out right here in Amherst is the Erie County or Erie Community College STEM building. That is a project that is managed by Erie County, a $30 million new construction project. That type of project would be applicable going forward. Big part of our industry, though we don't necessarily think about it, is agriculture. You don't have too many farms in Amherst. But there are a lot of farms in this area. Go into Wegmans and Tops and you'll see grown local. Well, that was grown at Henry Farms or the Zittle Farms or the Eagle Farms. And you'd be shocked at the impact that agriculture has on our community. But one of the things that we don't have that we're sort of behind the times in compared to other areas is an agribusiness park. And what I'm talking about is creating a business park for the agricultural industry to help get its product out of the area. We have some very important manufacturers in this region or producers that are, which you wouldn't necessarily think of as agriculture, but they are rich products. Agriculture, because using agricultural products to make a food product that's being distributed elsewhere. Steuben Foods, you may not have heard of, but you've probably had a lot of their milk products and other types of products that are based in Elma. What we want to do is create a business park so that these entities can come together so that a milk manufacturer will have the opportunity to be in the same facility as another one. Genesee County has done this very well, and that's one of the reasons why they continue to grow with regards to their dairy and the products that are related to it, such as yogurt. We don't have that in Erie County, but we should. We've identified two locations. We're actually negotiating with one of the owners of the location right now down in the town of Evans to take what was an old airport and turn it into an agricultural industrial park so that it can help the communities, this is helping a rural section, address a significant need, which is having the infrastructure. Because if you are a Steuben Foods and you're in Elma and you say, hey, I want to build a new facility, we don't have room here, let's go to this agricultural park, but we can't go down to Evans because they don't have reliable high-speed internet. Well, you got the agricultural park there, they'll have reliable high-speed internet. So those are, it's an initiative on the agricultural one. And when I go out to the agricultural community, they're like, yes, this is exactly what we need. Because you need to have these in our region. And Genesee County has it, we don't have it. And if you go across the Midwest, every community has it, and they succeed as a result of it. Binational Logistics International Trade. We've been working with some time now, our friends at Invest Buffalo Niagara, formerly known as Buffalo Niagara Enterprise, VNE. To bring Canadian companies into Erie County, Western New York. We've had a number of successes where there are companies that they've working with our partners, including CDEP out of Canada, which markets our region to Canadians. I'm not looking, never have been looking, for Canadian companies to just pick up their roots and move to the United States. That's not going to happen, nor would we want that to happen. We've been unfortunate recipient of that in the past where a company just moved out of our area and went down south. But what we're talking about is if a Canadian company is looking at creating a subsidiary, bringing business into the United States, why would they go to Florida? Why would they go to Texas when they should be here, right across the border from where they are? Toronto, if you've been there any time recently, and it's not easy to get there because traffic is horrible, but if you've been there, you see how huge it is and how expanding it's getting. It is the financial capital of Canada. Canada and China are basically the same with regards to the United States' number one trading partner right now. It used to be Canada for many years in a row. Now they're basically tied. There's so many other parts of the country that would love to have what we have here. And many different reasons why, but one that we have that they'll never have is our proximity to Toronto and Canada. So we've had successes where we've been able to bring Canadian companies into our region, and through the marketing efforts of our partners, working with this Canadian company, CDEP, we're going to continue to do that and also work with others that you don't necessarily think of, including even Visit Buffalo Niagara through its marketing arm in tourism, because they keep on bringing companies or writers down here and people down here, and sometimes the companies say, hey, there's opportunities here as well. So we're continuing to market ourselves to Southern Ontario. It used to boggle my mind. I practiced law, as the president noted, and one of the firms I practiced at had an office in downtown Toronto, and we used to assist Canadian companies as they were coming into the United States, and they never, ever thought about Buffalo. They're like, well, I hear Carolina's a hot market, so I'm going down there. Well, did you ever think about Buffalo? No. Well, why? Well, it's just high taxed. I said, how do you know that? Well, that's what I've been told. And do you know that your tax rate in Southern Ontario is more than it is in Buffalo? And they're like, oh, I didn't realize that. We could compete. We could compete from the incentives that are offered by the state. We can do that, but we have to let them know that. So we're working together to do that, and as a result, we've had successes, and we're going to continue through pushing that initiative further. Energy. Energy is huge. So you got Dennis Elsenbeck, who, of course, many, many years with National Grid, and I had a lot of conversations with Dennis over the years on projects because one of the most important questions that is asked right up front from a company, especially those involved in advanced manufacturing, is energy. Well, we have energy on that end, and we also have another energy thing which we're looking at through a program we're calling ECLIPSE, Erie County Low Income Program for Sustainable Energy. I didn't come up with that acronym, but whoever did was great, especially this year with the ECLIPSE. But when we talk about energy, we're talking about the energies that's used by manufacturers as well as the average homeowner. And you have to have ready available supply of energy. One way of doing that is also ensuring that our homeowners aren't using excessive energy in its affordable form. So there is what's called the home energy affordability gap. And as of April of 2016, it basically was $69 million more for those who are kind of at risk in our community. It was costing them $69 million more than what they could afford to pay. So through the ECLIPSE program, we're hoping to eliminate the old heat or eat scenario, where an individual made the decision, do I pay my heat this month or do I buy food for my family? And as you hear the stories, and we see it because we run the home energy assistance program, the HEAP program through Erie County government, people make those determinations. Well, you know, I didn't have enough money to pay my heating bill last month, my electric bill. I had to buy food. I had to pay for my rent. So our goal is to, through this program, offer additional buying power, so to speak. When companies come in, they want their buying power. Well, we're buying a certain amount of watts, kilowatts, megawatts. Well, you're not going to buy megawatts with programs, but you can create neighborhoods in which you're buying larger wattage is sort of in a pooled resource, and that's what we're talking about, coming up with a pooled resource, reduce their costs, as well as provide additional assistance not only for the energy companies, but to ensure that there is a ready supply because we're only purchasing and using what we need. So that's the ECLIPSE program, which some people say, well, it sounds more like a social services program. It is, but it's also an economic development program. So you got to think not just in your own little silo or in one little road, thinking, oh, this is, we're only talking about economic development. A lot of this stuff crosses over in many different areas, and this is a perfect example of one that does. Big one in our area, of course, is tourism. Tourism's huge as it pertains to Erie County, Western New York. We are an international tourist destination. It says Erie County will become a major international tourism destination. Well, I say Western New York is an international tourism destination because of Niagara Falls. We want to make certain that Erie County is the international tourism destination we know it should be and can be, and we're getting a lot of positive press about many of the good things that are happening in town, especially Frank Lloyd Wright's Darwin Martin House, things like that. But you got to also have the amenities here to bring in the type of business that you'd like, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, our convention center was too small and too ugly on the day it was built. And I've gone around, and when I go to conventions and meetings in other cities, I take lots of pictures of the convention center. My staff thinks I'm crazy. I'm, like, taking corners and stuff like that. And I just want to know what they have in these other communities. We were in Columbus, Ohio, about a month ago for the National Association of Counties meeting, and we were looking at their convention center, and Columbus is a bigger city. It's also this part of the state capital. But its convention center had 36 loading bays. You know how you got to get in the convention center in downtown Buffalo? You got to drive down Pearl Street, and then they pull in. They don't even really have a loading bay. I mean, it's outdated. I've gone to other communities. Communities our size. People talk about Charlotte and Mecklenburg County, and they're like, oh, it's this great metropolis. Charlotte is almost the same identical size as the city of Buffalo, and Mecklenburg County is almost identically the same as Erie County. But we treat that as this oasis. And you look at the region, and it's not that different population-wise, but there's a lot of difference otherwise. Well, I will put our tourist destinations up against Charlotte and Mecklenburg County any day. But you go to their convention center, and it's this beautiful, larger facility. Ours is old. We need a new one. We're doing a study. The county is paying for it. So we are doing a study. We're not doing a study to say whether we need a new convention center. That we know we need a new convention center. But before we can go ahead and build a new convention center, we need to know the size, what works, what can we do, how many bays would we need to have based on a size of the convention center so the trucks can load up. How many bathroom stalls? Things like that. I mean, the stuff that you don't think about, but the engineers are like, oh, we need to know this based on the square footage. How many people can you put per square foot? You got to have that all in place. So we are performing that study because I could announce, we're building a new convention center. But unless we have the study that says, here's the size convention center, here's how much it'll cost, here's where it's going to be, and it's going to cost based on whether you're going to do, okay, is it going to be two floors, is it going to be three floors based on the size of it? So we're moving ahead with that, and the county's moving ahead with this. And the convention center study, we've chosen a partner to work with, and we issued a national RFP. We got national companies to come in. I'm very glad to say that almost every one of the national companies partnered with local architectural firms, local engineering firms. So the party that we chose has a local component as well. And hopefully by this time next year, we'll have the answers to what is appropriate for our market. We're going to compete with Orlando? No. We're not going to compete with Atlanta. But we should be able to compete with our sect, which includes Milwaukee, Grand Rapids, Michigan, places like that, and maybe we can even steal away some of the conventions that go to Charlotte, which I'd like if we did that. ECIDA enhancement, one of the things that we're looking at the Erie County Industrial Development Agency, as well as I believe all IDAs, is we need to come up with an update in what's called the UTEP. UTEP is the Uniform Tax Exemption Policy that all the IDAs are supposed to follow. They don't always follow them, but they're supposed to follow. And one of the things that we want to look at is a tiered incentive. Which means it was described to me early on when I first gotten as a controller before county executive. Well, here's how we do things at the ECIDA. We basically have, it's like going for ice cream, but where you had a choice between vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry. We had one that was vanilla. 7 years, you got this tax break. You had one that was 10 years. That was kind of the chocolate. And then there was strawberry. I was like, what's strawberry? Well, that's 15 years. I'm like, wait a minute, that might not work. What if we should be doing a tax incentive for 3 years based on the amount of jobs that are created or the needs of the community? If you give a business an opportunity to go for the 15-year tax break, they're going to say, yeah, I'll take the 15-year tax break. But what we've realized is over time, we've changed the way the playing field is. In Erie County, we have a recapture policy, which you may have seen. There's a Gordon Foods, Michigan company, applied for a tax break, said they were going to sell as a wholesaler, only sell products to restaurants. The week they opened, they immediately, hey, we're retail. We're prohibited from giving tax breaks to retail. So we're going back after the tax break we gave them because they lied to us. If we didn't have policies like that in place, we wouldn't be able to enforce them. We've done it with other companies. Now we need to look and do an analysis. Is our economic development appropriate for the project? Is what we offer appropriate for the project, and should we change it over time? I believe, in talking with others, we need to ensure we have a tiered incentive type of program, and talking over with some of the town IDAs, they agree as well. So we're going to revisit that and take a look at it. Quality of life actually matters a lot for economic development, maybe more than most people think, and one of the things that we're doing to assist in that is to do a master plan for our Erie County parks right now. You could fit every single acre of the Olmsted Parks in the city of Buffalo in Chestnut Ridge Park and still have an extra 200 acres. Chestnut Ridge Park alone is 1,200 acres. It's larger. There's only one other county park in the United States that's larger, and that happens to be a park that's a desert in Arizona, where I think they don't even have a park ranger. It's just a bunch of snakes. But we've got 12,000 acres, as we like to say, to enjoy of county parks, and we have to maintain them, which means if you're a company and you're in the North Towns, you want to know what's available as quality of life for the people there. You want to have strong parks. So you want to have a good Ellicott Creek Park. You want to ensure if you're in Lancaster, you have a strong Como Park, same thing as the parks in the South Towns. So that's our goal, is to ensure that we have a quality level of life here, of course, and that pertains to all the different things that we have, but in the county, we can play a role with that by ensuring our parks are invested properly, and you have to do a new master plan every 20 years, and we're doing a master plan to make that happen. One of the final ones we're talking about is the blue economy. It's not something you'll see on other economic documents, but we have a lot of advantages here that other areas of the country don't have, and the biggest one really is an abundant supply of fresh water. And if you look at other parts of the country, especially the Arizonas and the Southwest, they do not have an abundant, or Southeast, they do not have an abundant supply of fresh water. And so we need to promote our abundant supply of fresh water. We need to promote the various projects that are based off of it, as well as other aspects of it. We've cleaned up Lake Erie. We're cleaning up the Buffalo River. There's other parts of our region we need to clean up. South Park, which actually connects directly to Lake Erie through a number of canals, is environmentally dead. If you drive around South Park today, you will see a whole bunch of lily pads and nothing else in the water. It's dead. The lake needs to be restored. We care about it from Erie County because the Buffalo and Erie County Botanical Gardens are in South Park. We own the Buffalo and Erie County Botanical Gardens. We want people to come to the Botanical Gardens. They won't want to come to the Botanical Gardens if they come to the Botanical Gardens and they smell the air and it smells horrible because the lake is dead. And it connects straight to Lake Erie. So it's just an example of one little project that can help create a better community for all those who like South Park. South Park is actually owned by the City of Buffalo. But we're working with multiple partners, including the City of Buffalo, the Olmsted Society, grants from New York State to examine what needs to be done to restore South Park Lake. Why do we do this? Well, if we don't, what will happen to it otherwise? It'll just continually get worse and worse, and what used to be a beautiful little gem of a park, no one will want to go to. And we'll say, why didn't they take care of it? We have an opportunity to do it. We should. So that's the new economic plan. It builds on the old ones. What we did, as I said, we've 19,400 new jobs in total in the Buffalo and Niagara metro region. That includes Buffalo in Niagara County and Erie County. But if you look at the numbers, it literally is 75% of those jobs are all in the Buffalo market. And almost, I'd say it, most of the job growth that you see is actually in Erie County. Not so much in Niagara County. I'll help my friends out in Niagara County anytime they want because when Niagara County grows, so does Erie County. It's as simple as this. People are like, what's the hub of the region? I said, the City of Buffalo will always be the hub of the region. As City of Buffalo goes, so does Erie County. As Erie County goes, so does the rest of Western New York. Working together, we are creating the community we always knew it could be, and it took a lot of years to get there, but we can't stop because things are better than they were. We need to continue the good work. We need to focus in areas to ensure that the jobs are there, that the employees are there for those jobs, because we could bring in a company, but if we don't have them properly trained through our workforce development aspect, they're not going to stay here very long if they can't find the employees for the jobs that exist in this community. So we're going to continue to do that. It is going to take time. It's not something that's going to end anytime soon. But I know working together, we can continue to do that. And I look forward to hopefully reporting back in 5 years from now that it's not now 19,400 new jobs, all from the private sector, but it's 30,000 or more. And I know we can do it. A lot of people didn't think we'd get to this point today, but we can do it, and we will do it if we continue to work together. Thank you, and be glad to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. We have two people, I believe, with microphones walking around. We have a little bit of time for questions, so please let the people know that have the microphone so that they can come in. This is being taped. You'll want to be on the tape. So, thank you.
Okay. So you got one back here.
Thank you very much. I really appreciated the theme that ran through a lot of your points here about inclusion, about having some real intentional focus on areas of high poverty rates, of ensuring equal opportunity for everyone. And I'm curious to know what some of your concerns might be, if any, about some things going on at state and particularly national levels that are beyond your control. The uncertainty over healthcare, for example. the situation right now with immigration and specifically refugees who have been such an important part of our economy. I wonder if you could speak to your concerns about that, if any.
Sure. It actually has a tremendous impact on a lot of things that we do here. And I've been a pretty vocal advocate on some of these issues. The community development block grants, we talked about funding a number of programs. We talked about 400,000 in the one program, but there's about another 650,000 that we're funding in other programs annually. Well, that fund is all part of the federal community development block grant fund. And there was strong advocacy from not only myself, but town officials, local officials, and our congressmen, Congressman Higgins and Collins, to keep those programs. So they are in the budget. But the original Trump budget had a 100% cut. The HEAP program had a 100% cut. Healthcare, of course, is huge. We've seen it. We know the numbers and how many people get healthcare today that didn't get them before. And our health commissioner will always say, you'll have a better, stronger community as long as your community is healthier. It's as simple as that. And so it is something that we watch almost every day. When the issues were coming out with the federal budget, I had each of my commissioners come up with a report, which we then compiled and released as the impact on Erie County government from the Trump proposed budget. And it was not pretty. It was actually quite scary. There are many programs that we rely on, not just for economic development, but that to help people ensure that they can get through their daily life, that were on the chopping block and still technically are. Until the budget's passed, you don't know exactly what you get. And I think everyone's worried. And it's funny because I'd have my departments and they'd all be focused on their one little area. Senior services parts of senior services is really on the chopping block. They're focused on their thing. Environment planning's focused on theirs. Social services had theirs. The economic development folks, and so on and so on. And I said, that's great. I'm going to compile this report. I want you to each read the whole report, not just the report sections that you dealt with. Because everyone just wants to flip to, did they include what I said they should include? I said, read the whole report. And I had some of my commissioners come back saying, wow, I thought I was getting whacked. Holy mackerel, I can't believe what the proposal was. So we're going to continue to advocate. Because if we don't, if the congressional representative senators don't hear, then what's going to happen? They're going to think, hey, it's fine, we'll cut that. So it is an issue. And county government is the primary provider of health and human services for the greater region, is the one that sees it more than anyone else. With all due respect to the towns, City of Buffalo, if somebody is in need, they're coming to the county for what is now called SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which everyone knows is food stamps. County, you apply for. HEAP, Home Energy Assistance Program, county. Temporary assistance for needy families. It is the program that replaced the old welfare program. That all comes through the county. So we're the ones that see it, and we can see the trends sometimes on the economy even before the economists will see it, because we'll see the amount of people that are coming in. A good trend, we know there's less people coming in for the first portion of assistance that you get when you just apply for social service assistance. So there's actually less people who've been coming in seeking that assistance. That's what you would expect with the economy going up. We did see it for a while there a few years ago where that number started spiking and we were worried about it. And then it kind of moderated a little. And then the economists will go, ooh, there's more need in our community. And in Erie County, we're like, oh, yeah, we could see it because we saw the amount of people coming in through our front door to seek assistance. I'm county executive of a county with 920,000 citizens out of a country roughly 300 million. But the decisions that are made in Washington, D.C. will affect in some way or another every one of the 920,000 citizens in Erie County, because they could be impacting issues with health and human services. They could be impacting and will impact issues with infrastructure, with economic development, and in one way or another, it's going to affect you whether you know it or not. Thank you. Another question. Here comes the microphone.
I'm a part of your family section of the OBR Task Force Group. And
I'd like you to
include people in recovery in the demographics when you're considering hiring opportunities for all of the employment opportunities that you are creating. We have a generation that is becoming lost. Huge holes in their resumes, and even in their school resumes. So if you could consider that portion of our population.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for serving on the family section of the opiate task force. We have a task force, of course, to address the opiate crisis. I signed an executive order declaring a public health crisis in early 2016 with regards to the opiate epidemic. We have a task force that has nine subcommittees. One of them is family section, and we say it is actually families and others of those who've lost loved ones or are dealing with the epidemic who come together to offer assistance in many different ways. I'd have to run that by our personnel. I'm not certain how you do it, where I agree you want to give individuals who've lost an opportunity because of a drug addiction from having employment to get back in the employment roles once they're recovered. I don't know if we can ask any health-related questions, though, or it would be a federal violation. I know we can't certainly on an application. Are you a recovering addict or something? We can't do that. So it's just, I don't know how we do it. I'd have to talk to personnel and see if there's a way of doing it. Because if we did that, we'd actually be in violation of the law. We can't try to, it's like anything. It's like the issue with regards to salary data. It's illegal for an employer to ask, how much did you make in your last job? It's actually illegal to do that. Most employers don't realize that. I'm sure the Damon College crew in here is like, oh, geez, I don't know. Did I fill that out on my application? But why is that? Because it actually can be used for gender discrimination. To discriminate and know that, oh, that person was only making $23,000. I pay my other employees $30,000, but if they're only making $23,000, I'll offer them $25,000. But there's certain things you can and cannot ask as part of the employment process, and I remember that from being a practicing attorney because I had a bunch of clients that were like, why can't I ask that question? It's likely you can, but you're going to get a big lawsuit against you, so I'd recommend that you don't do it. That usually worked. Sometimes. The attorneys are smiling. So... I'll talk to my personnel. I don't know how we could do it without, so that if somebody is recovering and they apply, certainly they should apply, and we can get information on jobs that are available much more readily to the group to help people identify, here's the jobs that are available. But I don't think by law we can actually, like, sort of ask those questions to say, okay, here's your opportunity for a second chance. Yes, Colleen. Wait for you got to get the microphone.
Upside down. It's a good thing I'm retiring soon. We had dozens and dozens of people tell us they would have liked to have been here today, but this is a huge vacation week, second only to Easter and Christmas, the week before school. So can we put your Smart Economy 2.0 on our website?
Yes.
And could we ask
the full thing you can put, yes, on our website, the PDF version, yes.
Okay, thank you. Could we ask you to do the updates? You did up. You started your presentation with updates as you do them. Maybe you could respond to them or reach out to our members for input on them.
Any questions, they can be glad to contact our office, and we'll be glad to provide them information, whether it's on the initiatives that were completed and moving forward or just economic information. We actually have, through our Department of Environment and Planning and my office, the County Executive's office, we keep track of a lot of data, a lot of financial data, a lot of economic data, working not only with the New York State Department of Labor, which is the primary repository of it, but we have a lot of data that we always like to share. And if people don't know where to get it, they can always call our office.
I think people will be real interested to see the diversity of your report. Thank you.
Thank you, Colleen. Any other questions on any topic? All right. What is it? Was that you?
I said, what about bed bugs?
Bed bugs. You know, we've spent thousands of dollars. And the most recent bed bug issue was on the fourth floor of the Rath building, and it was from an employee that was bringing bed bugs from their home. They lived in a subsidized housing, and as best I can tell, the entire apartment where... complex where the gentleman lived has bed bugs. I guarantee you, though you probably don't want to hear it, there's probably bed bugs somewhere in a building in Damon. They're everywhere. It's just they're everywhere. And if you talk to developers, they don't ever want to talk about their buildings, but they find them. They're a nuisance. They're not a public health, or I can declare a public health crisis as a result of it, but they are a nuisance. We are taking care of them as best as we can. If there are any that are identified in Erie County government, we've had them. Our clients, we have thousands of clients coming through the Rath building on a daily basis. Some bring them in. We've identified that. If they come in and they walk in, we identify you can't go upstairs. You just can't. But the most recent one was an employee who it was the second time for that employee. Finally, he admitted that he had a problem at home and he just didn't want to take care of it. So he's not allowed back in the building until his house is clean, which I feel sorry for, but I'm spending thousands of dollars to clean the Rath building, and if he knows he has an issue, that's a problem. Yes.
Well, please help me thank our speaker. And by the way, there are no bed bugs at Daybird. Anyway, thank you for coming, and we'll have more, as usual, of our Distinguished Leaders Lecture Series coming up in the future. Thank you again.